All right, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals today. To my right is Justice Sue Walker, and I'm Chief Justice Terry Livingston. Justice Meyer has been in the process of recovering from surgery, and he's not here yet. Under 41.1A, we can go ahead and submit the case without his presence since we're having oral argument. He will, of course, be able to hear your arguments on the recordings. And so he will remain on the case. We will take a break between the first and second case in case he has been able to arrive for the second matter. All right, the first case on our docket today is SCC Partners versus Billy Robert Eanes out of Wise County, cause number 2-15-312-CV. I have your all's time marked in at 15 and 5 and 15 in response as well. So if you all are ready, we will proceed. And Ms. Dallas?
Yes.
Okay. If you're ready to start, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Cassie Dallas, and I'm here today on behalf of Senior Care Centers. That's both of the defendants, and I'm going to refer to them simply as Senior Care. I'm sure the court is relatively familiar with the facts, but briefly, Nereka Joy Eanes, the wife of the plaintiff in this case, is deceased. She came to Senior Care's Bridgeport facility in June of 2011 after just having had a toe amputated. She had a number of chronic conditions at the time, comorbidities, including diabetes, congestive heart failure, COPD, among others. About 10 months later, in April of 2012, Ms. Eanes started vomiting and having fever. She was transferred to a hospital where she was diagnosed with leukemia. Once that diagnosis was confirmed, she was then transferred to hospice care, and she died shortly thereafter on April 27th, 2010. Her cause of death is noted in her death certificate and is reflected in the expert report before this court was leukemia. Following Ms. Eanes' death, her husband, Billy Eanes, asserted a survival and wrongful death claim against Senior Care. And because Senior Care is a healthcare provider, Mr. Eanes was required to supply a Chapter 74 expert report, which he did, and which Senior Care objected to. Trial court overruled those objections, and so we're here to you on an interlocutory appeal from the first denial of that expert report. There's not been any 30-day extension. And Senior Care raised one overarching issue in its brief, whether the trial court abused its discretion in overruling Senior Care's objections to the sufficiency of Dr. Griffin's opinions on the causal link between Senior Care's conduct and Mrs. Eanes' injuries, namely the development of a pressure ulcer, which was discovered when she was transferred to the hospital, and her death. I'm going to focus on one aspect of that issue, and that is the sufficiency of Dr. Griffin's report to support Eanes' wrongful death claim. Whether the report is sufficient, I think, requires this court to resolve two issues. Or to answer two questions, rather. Can Eanes proceed on both the survival and wrongful death claim when Dr. Griffin's report fails to link Senior Care's conduct to Ms. Eanes' death? And was the report itself sufficient? Did this report provide those sufficient links between Senior Care's alleged conduct and Ms. Eanes' death? The answer to both of those questions is no, for two reasons. First, Certified EMS does not stand for the proposition that a healthcare liability claimant can bootstrap a wrongful death claim with a report that only addresses a survival claim. And second, Dr. Griffin's report does not supply the necessary links between the development of a pressure ulcer and Ms. Eanes' death from leukemia. Turning to the first reason, I think it's helpful to take a really close look at what the Texas Supreme Court decided in Certified EMS. The underlying facts of the case are a little bit different from what we have here. In that case, the plaintiff sued Certified EMS, a staffing, hospital staffing agent company, alleging that the nurse that had treated her and had been staffed by Certified EMS had assaulted her. The plaintiff sued Certified EMS for negligence and had both under both vicarious liability under both a vicarious liability theory and a direct liability theory. The court found, the trial court, the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court ultimately found that the expert reports at issue adequately addressed the vicarious liability claim against the hospital because the expert had outlined the standard of care applicable to the nurse, that the nurse had breached the standard of care, and that the plaintiff's injuries had been caused by the nurse's assault in the case. The court concluded that there was no requirement for the report to address the direct liability claims because, having established the vicarious liability claim had merit, there was enough enough information for the court to conclude that the entire negligence claim had merit. In the context of a medical negligence claim where you're talking about a single injury, that holding makes sense. But Certified EMS does not address the situation where you have a survival claim and a wrongful death claim, both of which require separate elements of proof, and an expert report fails to address and fairly summarize the causal link between one injury that ultimately results in the death. As this court is well aware, the hallmark of a wrongful death claim is that the negligence caused the death. And so I think that begs the question, how do you show that your wrongful death claim has merit when your expert report fails to link conduct with the death?
And well, isn't the proper procedure under Certified EMS then just to file a MSJ after you get past the expert report phase?
Certainly, Your Honor, I think that's an option that we have available, but because the expert reports are designed to prevent frivolous claims from going forward, if there is no link to the death at the point that the expert is writing his report, if the expert isn't able to articulate that link, then you haven't established at the outset that that claim has any merit.
But I thought that that's what the Supreme Court addressed in Certified EMS, was if you had one claim that was valid to go forward against that defendant, you don't have to allege in your expert report context every single other claim against that defendant.
Your Honor, I think the Certified EMS holding is a little more narrow than that, because the Texas Supreme Court was talking about theories of liability, vicarious versus direct, on a single negligence cause of action, whereas our position here is that Ms. Entz has asserted two causes of action, a survival claim and a wrongful death claim. And because the wrongful death claim requires ultimately a link between the conduct and the death, the expert report needed to supply that at least to provide a fair summary of that link at this stage. And I think the best example of where courts, I don't think what we're asking the court to do here is unusual. There are several examples cited in our brief of cases pre-Certified EMS versus POTS where your sister courts of appeals have parsed out survival claims and wrongful death claims. The best two examples of that, I think, are the Lackey case and the Lovato case. And the Lovato case actually directly says that you can't establish the merits of a wrongful death claim without linking the negligence to the death in the expert report. The Lackey case.
We had, prior to Certified EMS, there were also cases that parsed out direct liability claims versus vicarious liability claims.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Certified EMS answered that question. But Certified EMS doesn't directly overrule Lackey. It doesn't directly overrule Lovato. And subsequently, although in all honesty in my research, I didn't find many cases that have addressed this particular issue, I think that the El Paso Court of Appeals at least got close to addressing it in the Tenet Hospitals versus Bernal case. Now, ultimately, the facts in that case led the court to conclude that there was not sufficient, that the expert's opinions were not sufficient to sustain either the survival claim or the wrongful death claim and reverse both. But they have a lengthy discussion of certified EMS in that case, where the issue of whether tenant hospitals could challenge the expert report on the vicarious liability and direct liability claims was discussed by the court, and then ultimately the court looks at it from the perspective of, was there sufficient evidence to link the negligence to the survival claim injury, and/or was there sufficient evidence to link the negligence to the death? And because the court parsed those out, I think that it gives some credence to our position here that certified EMS didn't cover what we're asking the court to do here.
But they do talk about in certified EMS the reasoning behind the decision relates to the things that can further be discovered during the discovery process, which sometimes even lead to amended petitions. And they talk about that as being an example as to why you just have to have the causal link as to one claim as opposed to every single claim alleged, and that the purpose is just to dismiss those completely unfounded cases. So, I mean, doesn't that kind of rebut your argument?
Well, Your Honor, so we have argued in our brief that we believe that the survival claim was not sufficiently addressed in the report. Assuming for just a second that you decide that the survival claim was adequately supported in the expert report, the question of whether Senior Care's negligence had anything to do with Ms. Enns' death from leukemia was never addressed by the expert. It could have been addressed. And this court has decided, as recently as last summer, a very similar case where pressure ulcers developed. An expert early on in the case was able to say, this is how pressure ulcers cause infection, this is how infection can cause and contribute to other underlying conditions, and that is how the development of a pressure ulcer would eventually lead to or contribute to an untimely death. That's the Nexen Healthcare, North Richland Hills case, or Street Larson case, came out of this court, I believe, in June of last year. The expert report here is materially different. Dr. Griffin simply says she developed a pressure ulcer because of Senior Care's negligence, and the pressure ulcer was a contributing cause of her death, without explanation of how a pressure ulcer, when a person is already diagnosed with leukemia, would have any role in causing the death. And that's a nice segue to my second point, that Dr. Griffin's report here is conclusory. The court, I'm sure, well knows that magic words are not required, but also that conclusions are not opinions. Conclusions are statements that don't provide a fair summary. And all Dr. Griffin has provided us to link Senior Care's conduct to Ms. Enns' death is about two sentences that say the negligence caused the pressure ulcers, which caused her death. There has to be an explanation of how and why. It doesn't have to be a lengthy explanation. We completely concede that aspect of it. But it does have to be some explanation of how. And that's completely lacking in Dr. Griffin's report. And this is particularly problematic because Dr. Griffin recognizes two things in his report. First, that the medical records said that the development of pressure ulcers was very likely or unavoidable in Ms. Enns' case. Now, he dismisses that without much explanation. But also, Ms. Enns died of leukemia. So if Dr. Griffin was going to provide a sufficient basis for the court to decide that the wrongful death claim had merit, he needed to explain how a pressure ulcer discovered 4 days before Ms. Enns died of a serious underlying condition, leukemia, had any impact or causal relationship to her death from leukemia.
But doesn't he virtually challenge that particular cause of death and the reliability of the testing, the blood testing they did, and how it could be read as leukemia, but possibly could have also been the severe infection caused by the pressure ulcer?
Your Honor, I don't think he goes that far. He does say that he disagrees with the leukemia diagnosis, and he explains how perhaps the blood diagnosis was not sufficient. But nowhere in the report does he say the diagnosis of leukemia was wrong, and this is how and why. Rather, the proper diagnosis should have been an infection caused by the pressure ulcer, and this is how and why the pressure ulcer would have caused a death and looked like leukemia. It's true that experts don't have to go into extensive detail in every report, but when there is a conflicting cause of death, they do need to explain why it's not that cause of death and why it's the other thing. And perfect example of that is a case cited in our brief called Granbury Hospital versus Hossack. In that, and I may be mispronouncing it wrong, but in that case, there was evidence that the patient had died, and the expert report reflected that the patient had died from cardiorespiratory arrest. I see that my time is done.
Yes, conclude your statement.
And so for these reasons, for the foregoing reasons, we ask the court to reverse and remand the case for reconsideration of a 30-day extension in the trial court. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Smith.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Good morning.
I would really just like to cut right to the chase in this case and address certified EMS and dig in here on the issue that the court addressed is identical to what we're dealing with here. And the court concluded after a very lengthy analysis and many different opinions going both ways amongst the appellate courts, the court concluded if one theory of liability is established, then the court must not dismiss such a case. This is true because it's important to point out that discovery is stayed. Discovery is stayed. Discovery is not allowed at all for plaintiffs while we are preparing and filing and serving our expert report. The doctors that are reviewing the records only have certain records available. We don't even know for sure if we have all of the records available. And the court contemplated that and made its decision based on the fact that Chapter 74 was particularly set forth for the reason to dispense with frivolous claims. That's it. Plaintiffs' right to pursue claims must be preserved. And if they satisfy the requirements of the statute, then those claims go forward. And one thing that we didn't address is the two things that must be established, just two. All we have to do is put forth an expert report that provides the defendant with notice, sufficient notice of the claims at issue, and two, show the court that the claims have merit. That is all that's required. And in fact, we only have to put forth a good faith effort to do that. We just have to put our best foot forward and present the evidence that's available and show the defendant these are the issues that we see right now and we feel that there is a good basis to pursue these claims. Certified EMS talks about the two cause of action issue. And this is at page 630. I think this is important to note. It says, several courts of appeal rely on the statute's use of the term cause of action to decide this issue, talking about whether or not there should be one claim, two claims. And the court goes on. When we discussed the phrase in the In re Jordan case, we noted that it generally applies to facts, not filings. We also looked at Black's Law Dictionary, which defines cause of action as a group of operative facts giving rise to one or more bases for suing, a factual situation that entitles one person to obtain a remedy in court from another person. From this, several appellate courts have relied on operative facts to reach opposing results, either that an expert report must address every pleaded liability theory or that it need not. The competing conclusions demonstrate the pitfalls of this approach. So when Ms. Dallas addressed this issue and pointed out there may be a distinction as to vicarious liability or direct liability and survival and wrongful death, we're talking about the exact same thing. The court has already addressed this. And Justice Livingston, you pointed out something that I'd like to take note of. In a situation where we are filing a lawsuit, and why it was so difficult for plaintiff's counsel before certified EMS came out, is on some occasions we would have to put forth all kinds of theories of liability in the petition where we didn't necessarily have all of the facts to link those causes of action or claims. And what happened if we did not? Let's say we get down the process of discovery and we find out that there is another theory of liability that we didn't plead. So we didn't file an expert report on that theory of liability. And at that point, what do? Do we file a new expert report? Well, sure, okay, well, we can do that. But then defendants are going to challenge it because it's after the 120 days. So that's why we have to get back to the focus of the certified EMS case and the importance of presenting a meritorious claim, I'd like to just move on a little bit and demonstrate that we certainly have set forth at least one theory of liability, so the court may not and must not dismiss this case. The case, the Nexion versus Street Larson case that counsel brought up, that was my case. I argued that in front of this court. And the report regarding pressure ulcers, it was similar, and there was almost very similar phrasing about how a pressure ulcer can result in infection and complications. This is not, the report by Dr. Griffin in this case is certainly not condensed to two sentences. There's almost a full page of causation, and the court need not just look at that page. In fact, it's the four corners of the report that must be considered. Dr. Griffin goes into detail as to what was required and what could have prevented a pressure ulcer in this case, and all of the testing and studies that should have been done so that this injury could have been discovered and prevented. There should have been a proper pressure ulcer protocol that would have included positioning and turning and a good mattress. There's absolutely no documentation anywhere in the records that reflect that this was done. Also, counsel pointed out that a pressure ulcer may be unpreventable or unavoidable. In this case, Dr. Rushing at page 53 of the record points out that based on Ms. Ince's labs, pressure ulcers were certainly, the pressure ulcers in this case were not unavoidable. They were actually unavoidable with proper care and treatment. If these steps would have been taken to address her skin conditions, and the defendant certainly knew of these skin conditions when she came in, she was there to recover from injury to her lower legs, an amputated foot, problems with her skin condition. And if the defendants knew this and accepted her, they were required to address those issues. Really, I think on when we look at the overall importance of certified EMS in the presentation of these claims is that the statute is designed to protect against, certainly protect physicians and hospitals from unmeritorious claims, and this certainly is not one. There was a pressure ulcer that was a stage 3 pressure ulcer that's demonstrated throughout the records. There was vascular disease and serious complications associated with Ms. Ince. There was pain and suffering that's described in the report in detail. We've presented at least one theory of liability, and all of the claims should proceed and be addressed later on in this litigation if that is the tactic, and the court will have an opportunity to look at all of the evidence after discovery is open to determine whether or not all of these claims proceed to trial. And I don't have any other points unless justices have any questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Dallas, rebuttal.
Your Honors, I have one brief point in rebuttal. Ms. Smith said that certified EMS addresses the same case, that theories of the same issues that this case raises. But there is a difference between theories of liability and causes of action. And as a hypothetical, I want to present to you a situation where this case gets submitted to a jury on questions. If we were talking about vicarious liability and direct liability issues, there would be one negligence question. Did the negligence of senior care cause Ms. Entz's injuries? And you were instructed, jury, that you should answer that negligence can arise when, and then a description of the vicarious liability circumstances and direct liability circumstances. With respect to the wrongful death claim and the survival claim, the PJC has two different questions that get asked. And so far, Dr. Griffin's report does not help the court gain an understanding of how there is any merit on the second question. Did senior care's injury cause Ms. Enza's death? Now, we certainly have not conceded that the report is sufficient on survival. But if it is, then what we have asked the court to do, or what we're asking the court to do, is to carefully look at the report on the wrongful death issues and parse those out, because the report does not take the court through the necessary causal links from the pressure ulcer to the death from leukemia. And unless the court has any other questions, I'll give the rest of my few minutes back.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Ms. Dallas, thank you for your arguments and briefing. And Ms. Smith, we appreciate your arguments and briefing as well. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused. We will take a brief recess.